Today on the Fozcast, we are talking to Wrexham superstar Paul Mullen. We spoke about those famous fuck the Tories football boots, those wild trips to Las Vegas at the end of the season when they got promoted, and also what it feels like to puncture a lung and fracture three of your ribs in a football match, nearly dying. That may be over-exaggerating a little bit, but it's kind of true. And what could go wrong, eh, when you get your two best mates out to help you recover in Los Angeles? Up the Fozcast.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to the podcast, my mate. I'm absolutely buzzing. Wrexham are flying. They've finally got a proper goalkeeper and they are on the way up. The season's going well for them, but for you personally, right, I want to take you back to the start of the season, right? In particular, the Snapdragon Stadium. It was pre-season friendly, America, Manchester United. Talk to me about that day, mate.
The snap's about right.
Yeah,
it,
you're not wrong.
Yeah. Nah, it was mental, wasn't it? It was obviously an unbelievable trip that we were having at the time. And then 10 minutes into what was actually going quite well in the game.
Is that all it was? 10 minutes, yeah, as well?
10 minutes, quick start, one in.
Yeah, we were doing
well. Time I got to running behind, I was in. And then, sure enough, goalkeeper comes out of nowhere, RKO, see you later.
What do you remember? Do you actually remember, like, you turning or anything like that?
I remember every bit of it. Like, I knew beforehand, I was literally checking my shoulder, waiting for Johnny Evans to step towards me. Yeah. I just thought, he's gone to play it, and as soon as he did, I thought, I'm in. And then, literally, I looked and the keeper stepped back first off, as of us, we thought he isn't coming, just to take a touch and score. Yeah. And literally, the last second, as I've gone to touch the ball, I've just seen him coming, but my arm's already up and you're vulnerable at that point, and I couldn't do nothing about it. Couldn't brace or nothing. It was just whack.
And it was a collision. Punctured lung, was that right? Yeah.
Foot literally got to the hospital, scans, all sorts of, every single person in the hospital, I think, had come running in. And it was X-ray, punctured lung, four broken ribs.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa. And then I was like, they were like, oh, it's not too long, hopefully, on a recovery time. So I was like, I don't really care, to be honest. Like, when can I fly home? Like, because at that point, we'd been there a long time.
Yeah, and it felt like
it had been so long, especially with the time difference and stuff and sleep-wise. I was looking forward to going home. Like, it was near the end after that game. I think we had like 2 days left and then we'd have been on our way home. So I just said, like, when can I fly home? Like, can I go now? Like, basically, and they were like, no. Won't be at least for 2 weeks, could be even longer. I was like,
you didn't miss too much because it was the Philadelphia game that got rained off.
Yeah, well,
that,
like I said, I think there was about 3 or 4 days max left of the trip. Yeah. It was a 2.5 week trip, basically. Mad. I just want to talk about that, the actual incident and the injury, because I remember walking over and it was taking so long. And Moles is one of these lads anyway who won't ever really stay down. Do you know what I mean? You won't take the mick. You kind of just get up.
You might get up. Try to put it on a little bit of first because you have to. That's just the way it is. Everyone else does it to you, but usually I get followed everywhere and I'll just jump up as long as I can. But you knew
this was a bit different though, didn't you?
Oh, instantly.
Your lips were the same colour as your jacket you got on now.
I think, at one moment I looked up and Elliot was near crying over me.
Joking.
And he waving to Kevin, like, frantically. But obviously at that point I already knew I couldn't breathe. But I started to relax, thinking, oh, well, I've just winded, like, it'll go now. And I was like, oh. Like a minute and a half later, still haven't took a breath here. Trying to breathe in and just couldn't, and seeing him above me. And then obviously after it, everyone's telling me your lips were blue as anything.
Yeah, Elliot was in a bad way afterwards.
Colour drained out here and everything. And I was like, Jesus, like. But in that moment, I actually thought, oh, well, you can't breathe, so don't try. Like, you've, and then that, me relaxing in that moment probably helped matters, and obviously the oxygen they put on.
Yeah, because that was big news. Obviously, you guys were out in the States, but when we woke up in the morning over here, it was big news. There was obviously the injury being so close to the start of the season, but then also the manager, Phil Parkinson, was, I think, what's probably fair to say, not happy.
Phil was not happy, was he?
No, to be fair, I think the lad said he didn't speak for the rest of the game, even after it, until he knew I was all right. But it was mad. It was one of those things, obviously. I was awake the whole time, even when I went to hospital. You can't sleep. I've got oxygen strapped all around me and everything. So I just didn't sleep a wink. And I was literally seeing it come through on my phone. It was all over Sky Sports and stuff. And then, obviously, the way it all went down didn't come out nice. But I suppose it's not going to. Obviously, it's a friendly. And then the incident happens, and as much as stuff like that happens in football, I think from the gaffer's point of view and my point of view at the time, it was just like reckless and stupid more than anything. He didn't mean to do it. That's not what we were saying. It was just like, why? Like, even if you got to the ball, what was you going to do with it? Like, it was just one of those things. And I think the gaffer was obviously just frustrated and probably pissed off. You know, you go on them tours and the last thing you want is injuries. And that's probably the gaffer's biggest worry when you get there. And then for it to happen in a circumstance like that, not even a muscle injury, I think that was probably more what pissed him off.
And then when someone sticks a microphone and you know it's after the full-time whistle, you're going to get an emotional reaction.
Gaffer was fuming, yeah. He gave it full barrel straight away, basically calling the goalie out. Nathan Bishop was a goalkeeper, by the way. And I felt a little bit for him, to be fair. Don't get me wrong, it was a reckless challenge, and he should have got sent off, by the way. How he did
that was the funniest bit. I remember watching it back, thinking, how has he got away with that?
How has he got away with that? And I remember speaking to him afterwards, and he was gutted, and he was like, listen, can you just say to him, like, I'm so, so sorry. But
he messaged me, to be fair.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
really?
He messaged me a couple of times. Obviously, there was nothing he could do after it. Obviously, looking back, he probably looked at the same thing and think, why did I do that?
Or whatever.
That's just the way it is. But he messaged me and everything and sent some flowers to the house, actually, to me missus.
Oh, did
which
he?
Was,
fair dues.
Quite a nice touch, but obviously didn't change the fact that I had to stay on my own for 2 weeks. But thanks to him anyway, I got a 2 week
Let's talk about that, because there's probably worse places in the world to have a bit of recovery. What was the recovery like?
Before we talk about the recovery, by the way, can I just tell my side of the story from this? Because the very next day, right, so obviously we played Manchester United that night. I think we won 2-1 in the end, didn't we?
I remember seeing Elliot score on the cameras as I'm in the back of the ambulance doing it like that, with oxygen strapped around me. We won
2-1. By the way, the goalie, Nathan Bishop, got took off at half-time, and the other goalie came on and he just got booed for the whole of the second half. They just thought it was the same goalie, by the way. They were just giving him pelters. Anyway, the next day, right, we all had this massive golf day book, didn't we? It was at the TaylorMade, the Kingdom. We were all going to go get shown around the facility, hit some golf balls, have a nice time. Everybody wakes up, obviously, the next day, and the first thing on all of our minds is, how's Moules? So everybody's asking the doctors, the physios, how is he? And he's like, well, yeah, he's in hospital, he's okay, he's done this, he's done that, he's going to be out for a while, he's going to have to stay out there. And we were like, we'll just pass our best wishes on. We've gone off to the golf thing, having a lovely time. Halfway through it, Paul Mullin walks in with the doctor, just bowling around.
He's got
a punctured lung, 4 fractured whatevers, and he's just bowling around, mate, having a nice time.
You weren't
ripping
your driver though, were you?
No, they wouldn't let me have a go. But to be fair, the actual reason I had to do that is Kev Mulholland, the physio, was just like desperate to go to this TaylorMade place.
He's a golfer.
Like, anything for free, he'll have it. But we had a 3-day out to TaylorMade, so he was there. But I knew I couldn't be left on my own, obviously, because of this. But I knew if I said, like, I'm going to bed, they haven't slept, then he had to basically stay with me. He was the only one. And then I was sort of like, I'm not going to sleep anyway. I'd been on oxygen all night. So then that keeps you awake. It's like in Vegas, if you have the oxygen, you can't sleep. And like, I just thought, you know what, I'll just go. And literally halfway there, we went over like a pothole in the road. Oh my God, the pain was like, He was like, you're all right? I was like, yes, fine, like, just go. But that's the only reason I went, really. Obviously, I wanted to just go and lie in bed or lie by the pool or something. But I thought, you know what, best just go for him. He got us... His clubs didn't even call me either. He hasn't got any.
Oh, you're joking. They sorted everybody out with free clubs. Apparently, they sorted everybody out with free clubs, and it hasn't really materialised that way.
But didn't they arrive this week?
No, to be fair, they've got most of ours to us now. But his haven't come.
He's a scratch golfer as well, so he's going to be fuming with this, isn't he?
And
don't get me wrong, but like, Moules wasn't like trying to smash any golf clubs or anything like that. Do you know what I mean? He's walking around stiff as a board.
I was literally just sat over walking around, as he says, just watching the lads, like, so envious. Like, I'd look forward to the day as well for ages, but I just had to go, to be honest. What would I have done anyway? They only sat in the room, bored, looking.
Yeah,
looking,
you can't sit still, you.
I might as well just go out and
So what? How long did you have to stay out for then in LA afterwards?
2 weeks, exactly 2 weeks.
Why was that?
They said, basically, that if I got on a plane, the chance of my lung expanding with the pressure.
The pressure,
basically,
yeah.
Basically, with the already having a pop in it, it would just explode, basically, and I'd probably die.
Oh, brilliant.
Like, oh, right, decent, yeah. Like,
stay out there.
Because obviously, me being me at first, I'm like, yeah, all right, like on my phone thinking, yeah, I'll just search this. I might just jump on a flight and not tell them. But then when they said that, I was like, well, it looks like I'll just have to swallow it.
Serious business, yeah. So what did you get up to? So if you're out there for 2 weeks, surely tell me at least you had a good time.
Well, at first we were in San Diego, obviously, where it happened. And then it was taking a bit of time to try and get... But obviously, we was in the hotel anyway, which was lovely. And it was taking a bit of time to get things sorted. So we were just in San Diego, me two best mates.
Yeah. Did they fly... Were they already out there, or did they fly...
They were out there. They were in LA for the LA game, and then they drove up to San Diego.
Yeah.
And they were scheduled to go back, like, 2 days after the game or
whatever.
Then obviously I got injured and they were like, we're not going.
So what are your mates doing at this point? Are your mates ringing in work going, I'm not very well here?
Well, it was quite mad because I was sat in the hospital bed, obviously a big private hospital, like unbelievable place as a hospital, as far as unbelievable hospitals go. Like, and like my two mates just bowl into the room where I am. I'm like, what, how did you get in here? Like, do you know what I mean? They're like, oh, I just spoke to the fella on the door. He let us in. But then from that moment there, I'm like, you just go home, whatever. I'll sort something out. And they're like, nah, like, we'll just stay. Like, so they've rang in work and just said, look, Paul's injured, like, you knew why we were here, and that was it. They just weren't going anywhere. So that helped me, to be fair, though, because the club was saying, like, we'll fly your family or whatever out with you and with my son, and that, it just wouldn't work. And obviously, my partner wanted to come, but with him, it wouldn't have been possible. And then everyone else, mum, brother, sister, dad, everyone wanted to come. I was like, no, it's okay. My two mates are here.
Yeah,
so
it's
I'm
2 weeks, we're fine.
It settled everyone because they were there. So it was actually perfect. But from that weekend, obviously, the first night, I think I just went out and got a meal and tried to enjoy a bit of San Diego, even though it was killing me.
Yeah,
we went out the next night for a meal because we had nothing else to do, and we just went to La Jolla to see all the seals and that, which was mental.
Weird.
Start chasing people up the beach and that, which was quite funny. But then on the Saturday we went to LA, and by that point I'd had my sulk of having to stay was over, and I was like, do you know what, 2 weeks in LA with your two best mates from school was never going to happen ever in my life from this point on. And I just thought, you know, I might as well try and enjoy it as best I can. And as you know, the time difference at 3 o'clock in the afternoon there, everyone's asleep here. So it was like, I suppose.
Are you at least allowed to have like a beer or something? Do you know what I mean? I know you've got like a punctured lung and all that kind of stuff. But if you know, so you knew that once you'd done your injury, you were out for the best part of 3 months, four months, was it? So you are, surely you're allowed a beer or something, yeah?
Yeah, it was fine. Like, I could have done what I wanted, really. Yeah, I was watching, but I didn't really feel like it at that point.
Are you still stiff as a board as
well? Yeah, it's still killing me.
Yeah, okay.
But like, obviously, the night after I'd done it in San Diego, I'd lost my head. I was like, I'm just having a few drinks or whatever. But like, the bartender, like, I think he gave me like not a shot of tequila, like it was in a shot glass, so it looked, but it was probably a pint. And next minute I was throwing it up because I don't really drink.
Oh, that's going to work.
No, but I didn't feel it at the time, obviously. And Macha, my roommate's like, Mulls, what do you do? That must be killing you. And I remember saying to him, can't feel nothing. And I woke up the next day, I was like, oh my god, you idiot. So from that point I didn't have a drink or nothing.
Just have one beer, maybe steady and sensible.
That's what I mean. So just that one night of even having like literally what was it, probably three beers and two shots of tequila or whatever, I was sick. So I was like, because I don't drink. So then after that, I was like, tomorrow I might as well just enjoy the time, but without getting to that point, because it'll just make it 10 times worse. And
well, mate, we like I said, we felt sorry for you for the first day, for the second day, and then we found out that you were going to be staying there for 2 weeks, and straight away all the lads were like, you scumbag.
I'd take that.
I'd have taken that injury right now is what I'd have taken.
I remember when I met you in Philly and we were chatting, and I was going, oh, so Paul's sticking out for a couple of weeks. Oh, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
nightmare.
Poor guy.
Could be worse places to go.
To be fair, at first it was devastating. I did just want to go home. But then literally after 2 days, I got my head round. I was like, well, you're not going, just accepting. And then that's when I seen it as a holiday with my mates. And honestly, we'd get up and we rented the car. We'd just bowl around LA, go to all the different beaches. Ended up watching a world surfing competition.
Decent.
Just sitting on the beach, hunting the beach, I think it was. We went to that 2 days. Ended up going to the baseball games, obviously. The Hollywood owners and Humphrey managed to sort us out, so we ended up sitting literally right next to the dugouts watching the baseball. And LAFC went to their game, they looked after his class as well, and it was actually mental times. And then the Saturday before we come home, I took my mates for a night out. I was like, right, we'll go out for a bit, and got a nice meal in a restaurant. And the lad who sourced the restaurant for me sorted us not a nightclub really, it was more like a fancy bar next door. So on the way in, we're walking in, I turn the corner, and there's like flashes everywhere. So like, I'm looking behind me thinking, oh, we must be walking in here. My mates are then laughing at me for doing that because it was at me, which was hilarious.
It was for you as well.
Yeah, this paparazzi outside this club take a picture at me. I was like, for fuck's sake, this is mental in the middle of LA. Well, Beverly Hills we was. It's just crazy. And then on the way out, the same, like literally I walked out the door. My mate had gone to get the car. I come out the front door, walking down the street, and there's paparazzi running after me with cameras and that, like shouting questions up to me, like, oh, but how come you refuse to stay with the owner and all that? Obviously, not knowing that my two mates are with me, that's obviously why.
Yeah.
But like, they probably thought I was going to get in something souped up Lamborghini or something, and there's me just going to jump in a Mitsubishi in the middle of the road. My two best mates sat in it, just screech off down the street, just the normalest car ever.
Not wrong with Mitsubishi,
that a fraud, right? It was class. Honestly, that car got us around everywhere. Santa Monica Beach, all sorts. But that was the maddest bit, like paparazzi for one thing, but then walking along Santa Monica Pier with the rides and then people just walking past shouting me, like, I hope your injuries heals quick.
Crazy,
like,
isn't it?
What's going on here? Like,
were you shocked with the level of sort of love that Wrexham got when we were out there?
Yeah, it was mental, especially in first night North Carolina. I think there was a few of us walking down the street and someone winds the window down, shouted Super Bowl moment. It was like,
bonkers,
isn't it? One of my mates or something. Yeah. Like, realised, obviously, it's not. And then the next night, I think it was, or 2 days later, we were playing Chelsea. It's obviously Raheem Sterling, Fernandez, like players who play at the top, do you know what I mean? And they're announcing the teams before the game, and the next minute, shout my name, and the whole stadium just erupts. And I'm like,
crazy, isn't it?
That was mental. These players have played in World Cups and won World Cups and all sorts. And then they shout my name, and it gets the biggest cheer of the night. I was like, this is mental. Like, I didn't expect it, but I suppose when the owners used to say to us, you don't understand, we didn't understand, did we?
None of us.
I thought nobody had ever scooped who I was, but you literally turn up and there's 55,000 at the game and they all stand up screaming when they announce your name. I was like, oh, that was a bit weird, like, to
mate, and it was half and half as well, weren't it? Yeah. It was Chelsea, half Chelsea, half Wrexham fans, genuinely. It was half and half.
It was mental, like the stadium was just literally covered in Wrexham fans, like, considering it was Chelsea as well. Like, it weren't like we were playing just anyone. Chelsea, one of the biggest teams in the world, and then we turn up in the stadium split with half support. I was like, this is mental, but I suppose that's just the power of a documentary.
It's mad, isn't it? Right, we're here at your book launch tonight, by the way. Yeah. We're going to talk about your book in a minute. I want to get into it because it's an interesting read, to be honest with you, mate. It's really, really nice, actually. It talks about your family a lot. We can't move on, though, without talking a bit about last season and about how much this meant to everybody is just getting over the line last season, because like I said, I'll play football for 20 years and I think last year what we achieved was just, honestly, it's right up there, mate. It is right up there. So I wanted to get your perspective of it on how much that meant just getting out of that National League last year.
It was obviously what I'd chased for the whole time I've been here. So it was 2 years at that point.
And yeah.
Even then, after doing so well, it was still going down to the last, two games of the season, which was obviously one of those things. It's daunting looking back on it, but at the time I loved it. I love playing in the pressure of it, and you see the documentary, the latest episode that's just come out, and the man who's emotional, he's welling up crying at the start of the episode of what it means to him, but we knew that we're playing, that's what it meant to people, and people might think you say that willy-nilly, well, look at the documentary, that's what it meant to them, and to give them that enjoyment and the excitement and the pure relief, like to see it on the faces when we did actually get over the line on the pitch in the last, obviously, second to last game, and everyone runs on like it was special. And I think everyone probably says his throwaway comments when you're at every club, you know, it's a special achievement, blah blah, but like obviously people expect us to get out the league, but that brings more pressure, like it doesn't make it easier, like, because you're expected to, doesn't make it easier, probably makes it harder at times, and we obviously managed to do it at that point. And for me, that was probably what I was, one of the proudest things I've done in football, was be able to help get us over the line last season, because for 2 years of my life, it's always was on my mind.
Well, it was the season before, wasn't it, Paul, where you'd lost the player final, lost the FA Vase, was it?
FA Trophy final.
FA Trophy,
and
sorry.
The playoff semis against Grimsby. I think we'd lost one at home all year, which was when we went down to 10 men against Yeovil, and then we had Grimsby at home. Score four and sadly conceded five, which was the most mental game ever, but that was probably the story of us. That's just the way it was, and I think that's why it was so tense last year, is because of what's happened in years before. And it made it a lot more difficult for us at times, because you could sense when we were playing sometimes the nervousness between the fans. But what I would say, massive, though, that Boreham Wood game, they score.
Yeah.
And there have been games before when it was 0-0, like Yeovil, for example, and the crowd going a bit flat. You can feel them getting edgy. But that game, Boreham Wood scored, and it was like,
it helped us, didn't it?
And the fans literally.
Helped us.
You look around as soon as the game kicks back off, and everyone stands up around the stadium singing, and I genuinely do think that helps us. Like,
The Boreham Wood one was interesting. I was there, and it was... It didn't faze anybody, whereas you rewind a few games earlier, that Notts County one was awful to watch, let alone play. Genuinely, it was like a roller coaster.
What were you like in that Notts County game? Does it ever change for you as a striker? Does it ever change? Do you ever have down moments or moments where you get to think about it or anything?
After Saturday, when you hit the crossbar twice, and you
that must be annoying.
But no, that game was like, we'd lost on the Friday against Halifax.
Yeah.
which was
awful,
just horrendous. Awful. Like, but I remember genuinely sat in the changing room after that game, and in my head I was like, "Nah, this ain't happening now." Like Monday, like I was so on it, I couldn't sleep for days. I couldn't sleep waiting for the game, and I was actually so excited for it. No nerves or nothing. I believed in all the lads. So I was like, "Right, we're gonna do this." And thankfully, I think I say it in there. Literally, they get a penalty last kick of the game after everything's gone so well. I'd built it up myself to do well in the game, scoreboard set to up. I was thinking, yes, like I've done what I promised myself I'd do this game. And then we can see the penalty, and it was, oh my God, Jesus. And then he manages to pull off that save. And just that moment when the whistle went after that, I still looked at that at the time and thought, why has he kicked it out for the corner?
Yeah.
Do you know what you say?
Put it out for a throw in, yeah, or something. What are you doing?
He kicked it out for the corner. I don't even know what it was. But at the time, I remember, like, because I faced the other way.
Yeah.
And I literally heard them shout as you saved it. So I turned round to see what was happening. And we've kicked it out for the corner, and I'm running back. Why have you done that?
No.
Like, so then I ended up sprinting back. But when that whistle went, I think it was relief. But we also said, walking around the pitch, obviously everyone at that moment was like, that's it, like, they've gone up and that. But I remember it was two of walking around the pitch at the end, and we were like, this ain't over. Yeah. I said to their manager, he came over, like, congratulations, like, he's brilliant, well played. And I said, look, I've seen some of your interviews beforehand, this ain't over, like, we know there's still a lot to go here, like, there's four games left, anything can happen, like, don't think we're going to
stop.
Went
and drew at Barnet away.
We had Barnet away
game,
the next game. We went down to 10 men.
That day.
Sorry?
He turned up that day, didn't he?
Yeah, you were busy, weren't you? Right, you were busy.
He put his hands in his gloves.
I love it.
He saved us
it
a few times, to be fair, that day. We went down to 10 and they were just peppering the box. And literally, it was so nice. Sometimes just seeing him come out and catch.
Oh, it was horrible. Getting a really tough match, though, wasn't it?
Maybe they fell in the net, tipping one over. But that game, actually, now looking back, was so important to just get out there at a point.
Isn't it funny, though, Ben, because you said at the end, like, towards the run-in last season, you said, obviously, the standard of the Premier League is better, right, overall. Yeah. But you said you can see it being almost more difficult
for a goalkeeper
in that league. Because I remember that after that Barnet game, you said it was one of the hardest games you played in because it was just relentless. Yeah. The ball coming into the box.
Relentless. Imagine like Ben Toza has got a world-class throw, hasn't he? Mm. Every single team in that league has got a world-class thrower of a ball, but then they've got a 6'5" striker and then a 6'5" defender and a 6'5" midfielder.
I find that sometimes when you play against better players, you predict what they're going to do. You sort of know what they're trained to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can sort of, if I do this, he is going to do this, like, regardless of what happens. If you get him once, he's still going to do it the next time because that's how they're trained to do it. Whereas sometimes when, like, we were in the National League and stuff, like, you'd sometimes play and you'd go to run somewhere and, why is he stood there? If I'd have just stood still, like, I was one-on-one, like, I don't know. But then sometimes it makes the game harder because, like, it's more unorthodox, so it is sometimes harder, even for outfield players.
Probably because sometimes they don't even know what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? At that level, and that's no disrespect, but they haven't been coached technically or tactically as much as the other as better players or better teams. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, is that, or even they're used to the other teams doing a certain thing. Yeah, obviously, we've got a lot of players and we work on a lot of things, so like we might do it differently. But they're like already there, anticipating what could be happening. Like, and then they have an unbelievable game against you, and you walk off the pitch and you think, if I'd have just stood still, like, on this certain instance, when
I'm
you watch your back,
I'm in
one-on-one, I'd have scored four. Well, they've had four chances anyway, but at the time, you don't see it. And then they come off the pitch and they've had a worldy game and stuff, and you're like, fair play. Like, whether that was just me being bad or them being good, or, as I say, them being unorthodox, then sometimes changes the game and makes it harder for you to play. Like.
Yeah, damn right. I think we've got to say massive sort of well done to Notts County as well. And I think everybody was buzzing that they got promoted in the end, weren't they? Because they were just as big a part of the story as anything, wasn't they? It was unbelievable.
That game, like, the standard of that game was actually frightening wasn't it? Yeah. Like, I've probably watched it back twice just to watch the game. It's enjoyable watching it. Forget I'm in it. Just enjoy watching it. But they were frightening.
I've never played against a team who play as high a line as that before.
No, never have I.
It was crazy.
It was quite mental.
First half was frustrating with some of the
offside calls.
Some of the calls, yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite mad
because I knew we were onside at the time. So then in the end, in the second half, you can actually see it on the goals. I literally go and start like 5 yards deeper because I'm like, you cannot give it now.
Yeah,
like, I have to do something because you will just keep giving it, which was credit to them. They work on it and they get the decisions for it because it makes it look like you're offside. But I think in that moment, the second half especially, we just literally started a little bit deeper and we knew we could get in. And I actually said to Owen O'Connor at half time, like, they're that high, you could chip it over them and run after it.
Kick
and get
and
it yourself.
Could,
half
yeah
as a joke.
Yeah.
And genuinely, in the second half, he chipped
it
over
that,
them.
Oh, he did that, didn't he?
That's what I said to him at half-time.
It was unbelievable.
The one he cut back for you, weren't it? Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when he did that.
I can't remember what goal it was now.
I think it was the one he cut back.
I think it was the last one for Elliot. He crosses it, and then they clear it. I stop him, pass it to Elliot.
That was unbelievable.
I said it to him half as a joke. but like
he played his own through ball.
Yeah.
Out on the wing, it was like he turned into like prime Maradona or something. It was unbelievable.
Like, to be fair, after the game, we were like, I can't believe they done that. But then obviously they done it all year and it worked for them. So it's what's still working now for them. So it's obviously a great way for them to play. But just for us, I think it was a bad way to play against us for that game in particular, especially the way we were going to chase absolutely everything down.
Like, not wrong.
But what about the final whistle then? I mean, it was nuts. That's
which
why
one?
You,
Nuts County?
Sorry, or? Boreham Wood.
Yeah, Boreham
That's
Wood.
That's why you play football, right? Because, you know, your front cover of your book, right? It kind of says it all. That was the kind of, I guess, the iconic picture, which will be remembered forever, is you kind of standing there with 10, 11,000 people going
it was
mad. Just,
it was mental. I think I was actually grateful the gaffer took me off. I think I said to a few of the lads before the game, or like if we did win it, like, I hope I can get off the pitch quick. Like, I had anxiety. Just that many people, like, surrounding me. Like, I don't like it. I tend to try and just shy away. And obviously, at the end, it was sort of empty by the where the dugouts were. So I ran on with the gaffer and all the lads and stuff. Next minute, big ride, the physio just picked me up. He's like, stay there, I've got you and stuff. So then I see my two best mates, I'm trying to get down. He's like, just fucking stay there. I'm back into my best mates. Let me go. I'm going to, like, me missus and my mum. Let me go. And that's how I ended up in the crowd, just trying to escape. So many people, I don't like being in that situation. So then when I got there and I seen all my family, I literally just stood up just to see where everyone was, just to see the occasion and take it in. And then obviously that picture, which is incredible, got took. It's actually quite mad because when we went up with when I was at Cambridge, we ended up standing on top of a turnstile because it was COVID, so all the fans were outside. And mad enough, there's flares and everything everywhere, and it's a picture like that of me stood on top of a turnstile, like another one, like it's just weird. But I didn't mean for any of that to happen.
It's lovely though, isn't it? It's lovely.
It's incredible. Like,
that was, I remember the couple of days afterwards, like that picture was the first one we saw with all the crowd, and everybody was like, mental. That is some picture, that is,
by the
way.
I just literally ran there to get out the way of all the people, and then the next minute, it was just that picture comes on.
It was like when you did your
videos
vlog
and things from that angle. Yeah, I was like, Jesus, I actually probably had the best view of all of that.
Yeah,
without
damn right
to.
As well, yeah.
I'll have to try that again, hopefully.
You mentioned Cambridge Air quickly. Obviously, it was off the back of the Cambridge success. Scored, how many goals was it? 30 something in a season. Is this true that I heard he got a stand named after him? An actual stand named after one season. This is incredible. I love this, right? And then you get the opportunity. So you've got promoted. You're going up to League One, and then the opportunity comes to sign for Wrexham, two leagues below. At that moment in time, is that a genuine, like, wow, I'm going to have to assess this? This isn't as simple as just a simple football move here. I have to look at the bigger picture here.
Yeah, it was mad because I went to Cambridge with the ambition to do what I'd done. Like, I set that out as my target. Before I went there, they offered me 2 years. I said, no, I want to sign 1 year. If it goes well, then I'm going to
move
back home.
You don't get many people that do that.
And if
you know,
it doesn't go too well at that moment in time after COVID and everything, and in my book it'll say all about what happened beforehand. I was like, if it doesn't go well, then you know what, that could be it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna be away from my child and my partner and my family for football, like, if it's not enjoyable anymore. But like, that year went exactly how I wanted it to. It was phenomenal, and it was down to the manager. He just had absolute faith in me and trust in, you know, even as a goalkeeper, if you've got someone has trust in you, never mind your manager, makes a world of difference. And I literally just went out and give me all for him every week. And I did have the best year in my career to date there. It was one of the seasons I had probably enjoyed the most, because it was
really
something when you go into a season, you're like, I can do this. I've said it all along, if I play, if I have trust in the manager, I can go and deliver. And I was able to do that for him, but it was class to go there. Obviously, I broke their record for most goals in the season. He ended up breaking the record for the most goals in League Two season, and while I was there, got the stand named after me and stuff. And then at that point, when it come to the end of my contract, I was didn't want to leave. Obviously you found somewhere finally, like, and but obviously with the family being back here, I'll be being autistic and things, it was difficult. And going into the summer, I was like, I don't really know what I want to do. And I asked them for a little bit more money, to obviously Cambridge isn't a cheap place to live, to be able to bring the family down. I wasn't going to be away from them again and commit to it and things. And obviously it's not their fault, but they just couldn't do it, which is fine enough. That's football.
Yeah.
And then at that point, obviously a lot of clubs have been interested in things after a good season. But when Wrexham rang at first, I was like, nah, don't really think so. Like, it's not what I wanted to achieve from what I thought I would have, doing a good season at Cambridge and things. But then obviously when I spoke to the gaffer, met him at Carbon Park, and we had a chat, and even still I left there, I was like, would like to play for him, nice fella, could really see myself playing for them, but I'm just not sure at Wrexham type of thing. And then that night I was sat in my mum's garden. We'd moved into there for a week while the house was getting renovated. And Rob McElhenney rings me, but comes up on my phone, like, plus whatever, Beverly Hills. I was like, oh, Jesus. So I answered the phone, and he literally just outlined every single bit of what he thought Wrexham could achieve and how they were going to do it, how we'd get there. They're still not, obviously, where they want to get to, is the very top, but that can take many, many years.
Yeah.
And he just said they wanted to be remembered for something in years to come, for giving a town, a community something, and every single promise he made me in there, it wasn't about some promises about me, it was about the club and the whole community. They've stuck to every single one of them as owners, and I think from that call was the moment I was like, do you know what, it's like something I'd be excited about every single day. And genuinely, in that call, he didn't mention a documentary or anything like that. Like, that people always ask, was that part of your decision? It's the furthest thing from me, if possible, but he didn't mention it. And then the day I come to sign, I was signing the contracts, and there's Disney cameras in my face.
That was the first you knew of it.
Like, what's that for? Well, that's the first time I found out when I was signing the contract. I was like, what's that for? They're like, oh, like, Disney, there's a documentary, like, you've just signed the form to say you can. I was like, all right, Jesus, okay, whatever. Didn't think anything of it, but turned out up to now to be the best thing I've ever done.
Just about the owners quickly, right? Because I get asked this so many times. Everybody always says, are they genuinely, like, what
it's mad
that
sometimes just feel like replying saying no, they're not beds, just to see the face.
They're absolute dickheads.
Because that's what they want. Yeah, of course, like, you actually can't lie. They're just like the nicest people ever.
That it's literally so them, isn't it? So
when
what you see,
I always say to people, do you know when you watch them acting and they're in a movie? Well, that's not them acting. That's probably why they're so good at it.
Yeah,
but that's not them acting.
It's natural.
That's them
it
as a person. So, like, I hadn't watched Deadpool like for years, and then obviously when I signed and stuff, like, I don't really watch films because I don't have time. But then I watched it, and I remember sitting there, and I turned to my partner and I was like, oh my God, like, he's not actually acting here. This film's incredible, but that's just him. Like, just the quirkiness, like, so funny, like, just so down to earth, and that's just them.
He's getting
like,
paid 20 mil to do this, yeah? And he's just doing it in being himself, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it was probably better that Rob rang you, because in your book you said that actually you'd watched Always Sunny.
Yeah,
rather than
the few of
Ryan's.
Them, I knew him as Mac, not Rob
McElhenney.
But I didn't actually know them both as Rob McElhenney. And to be honest, Ryan Reynolds, I didn't know. I knew he was an actor, but I didn't know what films he'd been in. I couldn't tell anyone. I said it to my missus, like, oh, Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds are the owners. And she was like, what? Like, really? Like, she's into films and that. And I was like, yeah, like, well, what's that? She's like, probably the biggest actor in the world.
Yeah.
All right, decent. Like, I didn't have a clue. Well, like, it was mental, but that's me as a person. But obviously, Rob ringing and speaking to the gaffer was like the two things that made me think, you know, actually, I think I want to do that. Like, and then I come and you have the fans, like, the way they have been with me. Obviously, I had to do it on the pitcher first off, and I still have to keep doing it. But the way everyone's just took to me, and it's made me enjoy football so much. And at the minute, I don't think life could be any happier, really.
That's brilliant. And what I really like about Ryan and Rob, and you see it in the documentary, you see that they care. There's so many stories that I've heard either through Ben or chatting to another player or something where there's a personal touch, not only about you, so asking how you are, and but your family as well. That must mean a lot as well, because you mentioned earlier on and in your book, your lad has got autism, hasn't he? So the club giving a shit must mean a huge amount.
Oh, absolutely. I think the first time Ryan met Albie, it was after the Stockport game. I'd scored the goal, take us to Wembley, and Ryan comes on, does saying hello and congratulations, obviously so pumped, like he gets like so into it, it's mad. And then my little boy's throwing up on the pitch, so like my partner's worrying, like he's being sick on the pitch. I was like, doesn't matter, like worse goes on the pitch, trust me. And so I run over to help him, and Ryan was speaking to people, and he just left them, come over and start helping my little boy, rubbing his back and things. And I obviously told him his name that day when he met him. And I was literally in the car on the way home, like probably an hour and a half later, and comes up on the screen, like text message, so reader. And it's like, oh, like, how's Albie doing? Like, there's nothing worse than a tummy bug and stuff. And I was like, Jesus, like, I knew he cared, but like,
he actually cares.
At that point, obviously, like, he might just care about me doing well. So, like, he might be obviously trying to make me feel good, blah, blah. But at that point, I was like, no, what? Like, he's so genuine. Like, literally, a text message, I told him my child's name once, and he actually cares how he is. Like, he didn't have to text me, he was going home, do you know what I mean? Like, he's got his own kids to worry about, and they do, the club really do care. And as you've seen with like Kerry, she helps like with the autism sessions for the kids, and they've got a sensory room organised, and something that I'm actually quite proud to say for Wrexham as a club, like, that they look after the autistic fans or even any fans in general, anyone with any disability, as they try to look after them and cater for them. And I think it's something that should be inspired for by a lot of clubs.
It's a big part of the book, isn't it, all the family stuff? Because I think most people, when they see a footballer, they just think of the sports person. But was that a big reason why you wanted to write this book in the first place?
Well, at first I had an idea to write a book purely based on last season, which was at the start of last season. Yeah. I thought, right, I kept a lot of notes of documenting things that happened during the season from in the change room and sort of give it like a change room view on the season. And obviously when Penguin got in touch with me to do it, we changed the style a little bit, and people wanted to know more about me because it sort of come from nowhere type of thing, and that's what made the book more interesting for people rather than just purely a Wrexham-based book. But family to me is everything, and obviously when I signed here, and still to this day you get idiots saying it was all about the money, and don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have signed if the contract was terrible, that's life. But
of course,
that wasn't the main reason I signed here. Like, I wanted to be close to my child, like, and spend the time with him, and to have a platform that the owners have provided us through the documentary and doing well on the pitch has led to that going even bigger. It's given me a chance to raise awareness for autism. It's something that's really close to me, and I think in the book it is well documented how much my family do mean to me, because if people said football or your family, it's family every day. I couldn't care less. Like, that's just the way I am as a person. It's family first. And now, as I say, with the platform to speak about autism, I'm going to use it. Like, it's not something that should be shied away from. Everyone in the world is probably connected or knows someone who's autistic, and they might not even know it.
Yeah.
You see now, like, there's so many people who come out with it. Like, even Rob's came out as neurodiverse, whether it's autistic or why, I haven't asked them yet, but it's so prevalent in society. I've seen loads of research saying that 1 in 2 children from 2026 are going to have some form of autism somewhere on the spectrum, and it's something that should be understood, because for us, we've got to understand them. Like, I have to understand my little boy. He doesn't have to understand me. Like, we come into the world, and it actually makes me think so much. We have to try and understand the world, and then everyone has to sort of try and fit in. Well, no, like, I have to fit in with him. Like, I've got to understand him, and that's the way it should be. Everyone should get to understand each other, and whether you're autistic or not autistic, like, get to understand the person who you're associating with or working with or in school with, and not everybody's different anyway. Like, I might not be autistic, Ben, you might not be, but we still talk and converse, and we might have different opinions and stuff and different ways of life, but that's just everything in life. So because you're autistic or whatever doesn't make any difference, and I think it's something that I want them to sort of be proud of and celebrate.
Yeah, damn right, like, as well, yeah.
I'm different, but like, yeah, well, that everyone is. You might be seen as more different, but that's something to be proud of. Like, you can go on and achieve whatever you want to achieve in life, and people will see it as, oh, brilliant, like, you've done it from being autistic. No, you've done it because he's him. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. Autism isn't like a barrier. It's just something that needs to be understood more, and that's probably what I spent most of my time speaking about in any public things that I do, is trying to get people to understand it more, because it's so close to me. And I didn't know a thing about it until it came to me with my child. And I think going forward, if people could try to understand it before that happens, it would help me so much. If I don't know, even the tiniest bit of information about it before I'll become, whereas literally now I'm still learning every day. I don't profess to know everything about autism. Like, I know everything about my child, and everyone's going to be different. And I've had a lot of messages through the documentary of people asking me or about different things, and I'll try to help, or saying, like, thank you very much for just raising awareness. You've now given me the courage to do so and so, or to come and tell people, or to even try and have conversations with people just through it. And that's something I'm proud of, like, more than any footballers. I want to try to help that. And as I say, I don't profess to know everything about autism, but if I can help one parent, then that's good enough for me.
That's what
if
I found interesting.
Speak
that,
themselves, yeah, then I could help someone else and so forth.
In your book, you spoke about, obviously, before you knew about Albie's autism, obviously, it was a bit tricky, wasn't it? Because you couldn't quite get the answers, but then once you kind of got those answers, you started to understand it. But what, like I said, what I love about it in the book is that you don't see him, you just see him differently in a positive way, not, oh, he's different. It's brilliant, he's different, we adjust. And all those moments where you come home from football and being who he is, he doesn't know that dad's on TV. I remember reading a segment in your book and you said that your wife had said, oh, look, dad's on TV. And he's like, no, not bothered, don't care, kind of thing, because he's just his own little person.
Even
isn't he?
Now, has he not watched any of the documentary or anything? No. Yeah.
He doesn't care, does he?
He does not care.
He doesn't care. Dad's a dad, mate. I don't care what he does.
I scored the goal against Boreham Wood, and his granddad was watching it with him in the house. And he's like, oh, look, I'll be like, it's your dad. Until he, like, zoomed right in on my face, he went, just got off. Like, But then I think, obviously, I understand them. He goes on his iPad, he looks at photos, he watches videos. To him, that's just how he had a picture of my dad. Like, he doesn't understand like football. He doesn't care. And that's probably the best thing about them being autistic, is I go home and obviously all the stuff that's happened in my life in the last 2 years, he can give a shit. But equally, it makes me go home and just forget about it all, because equally, as good as it is at times and things, it actually doesn't matter, because I'll tend to his needs. And I might want to go and watch clips of the next match or my last match on my phone. He'll just take it off me. You're not dad. That's it. So it actually helps me. So I'm like, all right, Sam, like, we'll just go and play. But he is different. But that's up to me to understand him. And we do that perfectly. And I want everyone in the world, even though it's a tall ask, like, but everyone in the world, just have a little bit more understanding, because you never know when it can come into your life, and pretty soon it'll be in a lot of people's lives, because that's just the way it is. It was a difficult thing at first to sort of accept, not accept, it was to get my head around it. Like, I don't know if he's going to talk. Now he's starting to say words, not in context. Like, he'll say sentences, but like we'll say, the other day I got sent a video from school. It was actually my birthday, but they were doing a game, and she says to him, all like, what book does this Teddy want to read? And it was like a party book, and then like he associated the word party and said happy birthday.
So then
he starts singing happy birthday. Yeah. So like, he can say things, but just not in context. He doesn't know how to use it to communicate, yeah. But that was the difficult bit, is like all the what if, and I've sort of accepted that now. Like, what if? So, what? Like, so it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? I don't care, as long as he's happy. That's the main thing. It was just the initial shock at first of like, why isn't he progressing? All the worry that you have as a parent. And I still worry every day about everything in his life, do you know what I mean? But now it's got a lot easier, because I've come to just not care. Like, yeah. I don't care.
You understand it more as well, though, don't you? So you know what it is.
Simple. I just understand him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like, I used to go home and I say in the book about being so guilty that I wouldn't go to sleep at night, like, without feeling guilt-ridden, like, that I didn't do enough with him, even though I couldn't have possibly done more. And I think just finally the acceptance of, like, do you know what, you give him absolutely everything you can. Like, just, he is. Like, stop trying to force him. He'll do things at his own pace. And the moment we realised that my life became happier, I don't think it's changed, to be honest. He's always been happy, but my life, my partner's life, all just became happier. And he's progressed so much for us, not worrying and not trying to force him to do things he doesn't want to do to learn, because he wasn't ever going to learn it if he was getting forced. Now he learns on his own accord.
Well, shout out to the Your Space charity. If you type in Your Space on the internet, if you search images as well, you'll probably see a picture of a pair of football boots. You've had a few pairs of football boots customised in the past, haven't we? By the way, the guy that does that, he's the one that does all the lads as well, isn't he?
Yeah,
does a bloody good job on it as well, don't he? There was one a couple of years ago. I think it was the most famous pair of football boots this country's ever seen.
Gotta be.
You got into a little bit of flack for this one, didn't you?
I suppose so.
Only a little
not
bit.
Not that I really cared, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I love that.
It was mad. Like, as you say, with the autism ones, it was different. It was class. They were after the Tory ones initially, which was even better, because it then gave them more attention. I didn't even mean for the attention in the first place, but the autism ones were obviously for Albie, and I joined up with Your Space, who do incredible work with like families who obviously have an autistic child routines. You need supervision sometimes for them, and Your Space give them that chance during half term to be able to. They look after the kids, and I give them one to one, and then they go to work. And as I say, with the other boots, it was quite mad. It was obviously I was sat in the house, and I was getting John White, his name is, to paint me some stuff on my boots. I said to my partner, he asked me, could he? I was like, yeah, no problem. What should I do? So she says, why don't you get the Liverpool skyline? And then the words of a Jamie Webster song, This Place, wrote above it. It's quite touching, like, about you love Liverpool. And that song's actually quite true, very true about Liverpool. I was like, yeah, no problem. And then I was thinking, on the other one, what could I do? And obviously,
I know.
The way the world is at the moment, people can't pay the bills, all sorts. Like, in Liverpool, it's actually, we'd actually say to each other, like, to my mate, he'd walk in, he'd be dressed in something funky. I'd be like, oh, you're a bad Tory, you. Like, it's an insult.
Yeah.
So genuinely, without even thinking of any attention or anything, I was like, well, that's quite relevant at the minute. Like, fuck them. Like, the world's mental. Like, they fucked up so many things. Like, and obviously, with all the autism stuff as well, like, the NHS is so backlogged with it, and they're just, all the money's gone from it, and privatisation, all sorts of stuff with the government. I just thought, you know what, that's going on my boots. I don't really care. No attention, I'm not really bothered. Anyone can see it anyway, whatever. And literally the day they got dropped off, Toes says to me, oh, like, you can't wear them. like, can I watch me? Like, I'm not bothered. He was like, nah, it'd be cause like chaos. I was like, no one really cares. Like, oh, I've got on my feet, like, we play in the National League. Like, and he was like, all right then. So then literally I went home, took a photo, club ring me, can you take that down, please? Like, it's got the club badge in the back. I was like, yeah, no problem. Didn't even think of that. That's fine. I get it. Took it down, took another one on the couch, blah, blah. Then that night, obviously, a load of people are like, oh, these are class or whatever. I went to sleep and woke up the next day, sat on the couch and turned the telly on, Sky Sports News, bang.
Was Paul it Mullen. Really?
Skipped onto BBC to go and watch The Breakfast Show, bang, Paul Mullen. Every single station, I was like, oh my God. Literally picked my phone up. I'd missed so many missed calls, texts, all sorts. Went on Twitter, seen the club statement, which obviously it was nothing to do with them. Like, they might have had to release that. It was nothing to do with the club. It's just my opinion. Like, nothing to do with them whatsoever. Literally got in the car, turned the radio on there, next station, on there, turned it off, walked in the shop to get some milk to go and make me scrambled eggs with. Walk in, it's on the radio in the shop. It's the same thing. I'd like, obviously a different station, but I was like, for fuck's sake, like, people do actually give a shit to you.
Yeah.
Like, this is mental. And that was the first time I actually thought, do you know what? Like, maybe people do actually give a shit.
This is a bit different, this. Yeah.
Like, I didn't expect any of this. Like, but maybe I'll just have to get used to it. But I didn't think what I said. Like, I stand by every single bit of it.
Did you ever wear them boots, by the way?
No, I'd love to wear them. But if I wore them, I'd get banned.
Have you still got them at home?
Yeah.
Oof.
Still got them in the house, saved them for a rainy day.
What I liked about it, though, Paul,
I'll save them until they're not needed anymore, probably in about a year's time, and they go anyway.
But what I liked about it is that, and it's obviously testament of who you are, is that at no point, quite rightly, did you say, oh, I'm sorry about that. It was only the element of the club badge, which you go, fair enough, I understand that.
Yeah, sorry putting in front of that, because there's nothing to do with the club.
Yeah,
to be honest, the world shouldn't be stupid enough to look at the photo and think, oh, that's Wrexham badge. They agree with them. It's come off my social media, not theirs. Like, but again, I had to take that down because it's nothing to do with the club whatsoever. But like, from my point of view, I don't care. Like, it's my opinion. Deal with it. Like,
yeah,
I haven't upset anyone apart from them.
Yeah,
but that's always going to be the way. You know, everyone's going to have the beliefs, and that's just the way I am as a person. And to be honest, I don't regret any bit of it. And I think even at the time, people might say, "Oh, you did know for the attention." Well, I didn't, because at the time of me posting them, Wrexham, and they still have got a Tory MP. Like, voted obviously from years ago before she fucked it up as well. But I didn't know that. If I did know that, then do you think I would have thought, oh, do you know what, actually, Wrexham fans might disagree with me? Yeah. No, I just done it. But obviously, they didn't disagree with me. They fully backed me. I walked out to warm up that night. We had a game against Halifax in the whole stadium. Start singing a song
did
to them
really?
As soon as I come out. So that was quite mad.
They still sing it now, by the way.
Politics is like a very, like a fine line in it. Like, the load of people get involved and things. I didn't even do it to get involved, and even to this day I still don't tweet about politics and stuff. I don't get involved. It weren't a political statement of such. It was literally just a
mate, politics
scouse.
Is as bad as football, mate. If it's an opinion based
thing,
something,
like,
yeah.
But if I wore them boots, like, I was going to get banned for games. If it was a fine, I'd have swallowed them. Went, yeah, go on then.
I'll just keep wearing them.
Just for the sake of it. But I weren't going
to, like, you'd have been like Michael Jordan back in the day where he used to wear colours. You remember where he used
not
to wear the colour Jordan?
League, like,
that's just what you're like. You're the non-league Jordan is what you are, right?
It would have been mental. But obviously, getting banned, I was like, it's not even worth it. I didn't even have to. It's all over the place.
But there's,
like,
there's football politics as well, though.
As well, Rishi Sunak is his name.
Yeah.
The PM, he's seen them anyway.
Has he?
Yeah. I think Ryan asked him a question about them.
Did he?
Yeah, he'd seen them. Which was,
of course, he's seen it. What's the future hold for Paul Mullen then? What do you want to do with Wrexham?
Not a fortune teller, but
what do you want? Where can you see this club going? Genuinely,
I don't know. The sky is the limit for them. Obviously, you've been here and you've seen it. The owners are hungry for success, but so are all the lads. And we actually want to give these supporters who've had so many years of hardship. We actually want to give them that moment last year again and again, and make them happy. You know, this story that we've sort of wrote at the minute feels like it's nowhere near finished. Like, we want to enjoy playing us for as long as we can, and while all the excitement's about, it's even more so. And to keep that excitement there, you have to keep doing well, and we're so hungry to keep doing well. That's why we work hard every single day. But the one thing I'm most proud about everything that's gone on is the fact that we haven't let it detract from our football, or this documentary, or me going to GQ Awards last week. Although I wasn't very good on Saturday, it wasn't because of that.
You look lovely.
Like, I don't let it affect us. We've just literally rolled our sleeves, and we are footballers first and foremost. We've got a job to do, And to be honest, we don't really speak about the documentary.
No, like, you don't.
It doesn't even get mentioned because that's not us. Like, that might be getting sent out about us when we did the interviews and things. It's all real. But we don't ever speak or talk about it. We're just ourselves. And I'd say that's probably what I'm most proud about. The gaffer just keeping everyone. Literally, this is football. This is what we do. Anything else doesn't really matter. Like, that's the most important thing. And I think for us, we've got to keep that going. And as a club, obviously Ryan and Rob have said the aim for the Premier League, which is a dream. Everyone has a dream. But who knows, in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, we've seen that Luton can be done. You know, it can take time, but they've obviously got the resources and the belief that they could do it as owners. And us as players, you know, first and foremost, we want to try and get out of League Two. We know it's going to be difficult. We knew that coming into the league, it was going to be really difficult. And with the documentary things being added pressure, it brings other teams maybe wanting to beat you that extra little percent, which then raises the game a little bit more.
Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that when you go away from home, have you noticed the opposition and then also the opposition fans? Because I've seen a little video from the weekend and the Accrington Stanley fans are going crazy. And then even the Accrington Stanley players are all dancing around like they've just won a Champions League game or something.
Yeah, well, obviously, you notice when teams celebrating things like that and it's something then that they injured a little bit, but equally, I think that's probably a sign of respect to us, is that it means that much for them to win that one game. You know, if it was the end of the season and they got promoted, then fair play. And I think that's just the way it's come. Like, obviously, I can't speak whether they do think that, I can't say whether people do want to win more just because it's us. I'm pretty sure they want to win every single week, but maybe it might mean a little bit more to them. And that for us was something we've dealt with for 2 years. Like, it's, and as I say, it's, we haven't got carried away, and people might look at it all and go, oh, these are big time because we've got Hollywood owners. Like, that's the last thing we are. And like, we've got to make sure that every time we go on a football pitch, the teams walk off and they go, no, they're not. Like, these work their absolute balls off. Run as hard as they can and give absolutely everything, and all that doesn't matter to them really, because that's what's got us the success. And as you say, teams celebrating like they've won something, like, it means so much to them. I think that's a credit to us, but equally, we've got to make sure that doesn't happen too many times,
right,
and they don't
get
to celebrate that much. And as I say, Saturday, Accrington were the better team and we got beaten. Certainly that happens in games. And you know, now we've got to go into next week and give it our best again. Like, and literally, I don't think anything changed in that game. He's obviously just had bad days at the office. I've hit the crossbar twice, one off a penalty, which on another day both might go in, or another day they might not. It's just one of those things. I think for us, we've just got to literally concentrate on ourselves and not get too worried. Obviously, we've seen a lot of things of Accrington fans and players celebrating and things, but fair play to them. They won the game. You know, enjoy it however way you want, and it's up to us to make sure it doesn't happen too often. And it's going to. The league's difficult. There's so many teams in the league and who can all do well and who've all got aspirations of getting promoted, not just us. The media says at the beginning, us, Notts County, should be favourites for the league. Football doesn't work like that. Everyone beats each other in this league, but it's our job as players to make sure that doesn't happen too often to us, what happened Saturday. But we know it's going to be difficult, and it's a challenge that, you know, we've got promoted for a reason. It's one we want to relish and try and take part in as best we can, and come the end of the season, see where we are. You know, it's
Moles, you're a powerful talker, mate. Honestly, you're incredible. We're getting towards the end now, and this has been absolutely fantastic. Honestly, thank you so much, Paul. Just a reminder that we are here for the launch of Paul's book, My Wrexham Story. We're going to put a link in the description down below. We're also going to put a link to the Your Space charity as well below it.
And we're going to do a signed book, Ben, as well.
Oh, that
would
be nice.
So if you go to the cyclinggk.com website, there'll be a landing page there where you can enter to win a signed Paul Mullen book.
Beautiful. Just quickly before we go, I want to take you back to last season again. The FA Cup run. Just give me how special that was for you as an individual, for the team, of doing so well in that competition.
I think individually it was something that you'd never set out as playing down the whole leagues to become the FA Cup top scorer. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that you think's probably going to be possible when you see the players who get to play in it, and obviously most of the time they get to the final or at least semi-final, so they play probably the same amount
of games.
How many
goals did you score in it?
9, I think it was.
Okay.
8 or 9 anyway. Yeah, I think that's right anyway. Yeah. But for me it was phenomenal. I think I scored in every single round, which was mental. I think it's just something, I don't even know if it's a record. I scored in the first round this year as well, which I think is 7 games consecutively.
So
I think someone mentioned, I think my mate texted me the other day, Jay, actually, and said, like, I think it's a record, like, which is mental. But that FA Cup run was actually special, like, and as you've seen the documentary, it makes you realise, like, the FA Cup is actually really important
massive
to Wrexham fans.
Yeah,
like, the times they've had in the past, obviously the big cup upsets they've had, like
against Arsenal.
And us going into them games, like we were fired up for them. And at the time, people were saying, oh, like it was disrespectful and things. Like I think Ollie said before Coventry, they said, like, oh, you've drew Coventry. He was like, yeah, Coventry. Like, but I think they wanted them to be more up about it. Like, well, a game's a game. Like, we don't give it our best. Like, obviously, they're meant to be a better team than us. Obviously, they are. They play a lot higher. But we're going to go and give it our best, see what happens type of thing. And then I think even with the Sheffield United game, like, I think after it, obviously, Billy Sharp said, like, we thought we'd won and stuff. I think he was more relating to us celebrating, like, Son, which was, like, 4 months before the game we played against them. It was not to even do with them.
Yeah.
Basically, that come about because Elliot's mate plays at Wales and Ben Davis is at Wales.
Yeah, yeah.
So Son was at the World Cup. So Ben Davis said Son loved watching the Wrexham documentary.
Yeah.
So asked if we'd send them a photo or a video. Good luck message for the World Cup. Obviously, we don't know if he's taking the piss or what because I've never heard nothing from Son.
But you're going to do it. You're going to do
obviously
it.
Then we scored back the next game. So we're all stood there to do that. This is like 4 months, 3 months before we even play Sheffield United. So I think when the club tweeted that, that was what he got upset about. But for us, even going into that game, we didn't expect to win the game.
Yeah.
We weren't disrespectful, but I'm not going to go on a football pitch and think, oh, he's better than me. No chance. Like, I'm going to go, give me best. Come the end of the game, if you're better than me, I go, yeah, good player, yeah. But in that time, it's 11v11. It doesn't matter who they are, like what the name is on the back of the top. Like, we're going to go and give it our best. And obviously in the first game, we should have won. We didn't.
Yeah.
They took us to a replay. And obviously in the second game, we gave it a great goal. We got to the 90th minute at 1-1. And they scored late on, which obviously, to play a team who got promoted to the Premier League and done phenomenal all season. I think they battered most teams in the Championship. And to give them two hard games like we did was actually phenomenal performances from us. But it was something we went into the games not expecting to win, but expecting to give a good account of ourselves and think, why not? You never know. That's what the FA Cup's for.
That's what it's all about, isn't
and
it?
We can cause one.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we? We had belief that we could do well. Like, we didn't know we were going to win or say, oh, we're going to win. I thought, well, we give it a good go, though. Like, let's see what happens type of thing. And then obviously, after the game, the way he celebrated more than anything was like, you know what? We've ran them really close there, and that's probably why. It's probably, obviously, he's been a phenomenal player and played in the Premier League a lot higher than I'll ever play, probably. But to see what it meant to him to beat us that day was like, you know what? We've really run them close.
Yeah, and you know, that's like relief, that is. That's relief.
That's relief inside.
Yeah.
To go, whoa, thank God that wasn't the upset because that would have been all over the place. And I think that was a good, that's what I took from it, nothing else. It was more just like, do you know what, he's actually that fired up for that game.
Yeah, yeah.
That's credit to us. Like, we put them in that position to make it mean that much to them. And
as usual, mate, the media will blow up anything they can blow
absolutely.
Up. We like I said, we know how it is.
Yeah, okay. So, Paul, you're kind of 8 games to go last season. Mr. Foster rolls in the door. What was the chat like amongst the lads? Was it kind of like, oh, there's a rumour Ben's coming? Or was it he turned up on the day? How did it go down?
Can't actually remember how we found out. I think it was just on the day he was coming in. I remember saying at the time, I'm not sure. I was like, he's been out the game for a year, obviously unbelievable goalkeeper, probably the best I'd ever play with, come to. It was like, after being out the game for so long, coming into this, like, this is crunch time, we've worked our bollocks off for this. I was like, I'm not sure, like, whether this is going to be a good move or a bad move. Obviously, no one does at the time. Yeah. I was like, but, whoa, Jesus, like, he's coming in here, and, like, I don't know whether he felt it, but for me, I was like, some pressure to put on someone. And I think even at that moment, being a Premier League goalkeeper, played for England, all sorts, even coming in, I don't think at that time he would have probably knew the pressure he'd have then felt playing them games for us. Because I think once he come in and realised what it meant to us, I reckon he probably went, oh, shit, I'm not sure I'm ready for this.
Yes.
I genuinely don't, because I think he'd probably come in and think, oh, right, decent, going to play. Obviously, love Wrexham, been here before. Like, not going to be too bad in that. And I think once he come in and seeing what it meant to us and obviously all the fans at this club, I think that he probably sat there and went, oh, shit, I'm not sure. Yeah. And obviously, he come in and got us over the line, especially at that Notts County shave. I think then it paid dividends, didn't it? But I think initially, I was genuinely at first, like, sceptical. I was like, oh, wow.
Mate, it's hard work playing in that National League,
I'm going to have to
put
all our hard work here on a goalkeeper who's been out for 8-9
months. Yeah, I know, yeah.
But then luckily, he comes in and saves the pen. I'm like, oh, fair enough.
Fair dues. It was worth it in the end. But I agree with you, mate. I didn't realise until I came through the door. And then, like, the first couple of games were a doddle. We didn't have much to do. I think we've won 3-0, 4-0. But we got to see one game, the Halifax game, which gets brushed over in the documentary. I don't mention it. Nobody talks. I had an absolute stinker. And I remember thinking, oh, we've just lost. We're really close to getting promoted.
If this doesn't go the way.
The first one goes in as near stick. Like, I've seen him get up and he's like shouting at someone. I'm thinking, you're just shouting to your sister. Yeah,
play. Exactly what I'm doing, deflecting.
And then the next one goes across him and you can actually see it on the video. He goes to dive, but the ground just comes up and he doesn't dive. He just falls to the floor. And I look back now and laughing, and at the time I'm looking, thinking, why hasn't he died?
Why hasn't he died?
Why hasn't he moved his feet? But then obviously you look back and the ground just come up and he just flops to the floor. It goes in, you're like, oh, Jesus. But then he made the saves then against Barner. And gets us out of there with a 1-1, which then becomes a very important point because it means you only have to win.
Yeah. No, 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 by the way. Yeah. Don't do me out of a clean sheet.
Do you know how I knew he was nervous? Because Ben's a pretty cool guy, right? You know, pretty takes everything in stride. Day before he was starting training, went round to his house and he's got me getting the ball launcher out of his garage. Just put a few in and just test my hands out. We're in his back garden, like we're 10 years old.
Did you not put gloves on before that? No chance, mate.
I hadn't put them on for a year, genuinely. Not on for a year. So, yeah, I was absolutely bricking it, mate. And like I say, when I came in and saw how much it meant to you all and how hard you'd worked over, 38 games or whatever it was, I was like, oh, yeah.
I think it was the first or second day. I was like, you're going to stay, you know? He was like, what? I was like, you won't want to, but you're going to get sucked into wanting to sign
here. Yeah, it's class.
And genuinely, the day like when we were on the pitch and everyone was like, signing that again. But he was like, I think I'm going to. I was like, I told you, I knew it was coming.
The lads, mate, it's what they do to you. They're such good lads, honestly. Absolutely epitomised by the Vegas trip as well, wasn't it? The Vegas trip. Like, we'd never seen anything like that. I'd never seen anything like that. The lads were just sort of eyes wide open. It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
It was mental, wasn't it? It was more embarrassing at first.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Because it was so over the top. Like, for us, like, I was like, oh, like, this, it's not really me. Like, looks a bit strange. But then, obviously, the more drinks you have, the more you get into your groove and into your stride.
Singing your own song in the nightclub
with the flags yourself.
Do you remember, bro, the first night we went to Hakkasan to the restaurant and then Hakkasan to the nightclub? And as we've walked in, do you remember the big screen? What's it called? Like a cinema screen?
Oh, like an Omnia with Steve Aoki?
Yeah.
They had the videos of our goals playing.
No. Paul Mullins goals. They had the videos. It was mental. It's like they had gone on the YouTube compilation of Paul Mullins best goals season 2022-23. Seriously, it was, right?
They were playing our fans singing.
That's it.
Steve Aoki's on the decks. He's playing our fans singing. So like to sing my song, Ryan Barner, then Foster. Just literally, he's just rattling the songs off and we're stood there like, what's going on here? Like, it was mental looking up, seeing goals getting scored on the thing. I was like, this is crazy. Like, we're in the middle of Vegas and you think you go there to party and no one knows. Everyone knows exactly what you're doing because the documentary's so
big. Being treated like royalty, weren't we?
It's some trip. Like, even now, like, every week, like, I'll say to the lads, someone will mention it and be like, that's just added motivation.
Yeah, we'll do it again this year, lads. Do it. Get just promoted again.
If you get over the line, the owners would be able to provide it for us again.
Is that kind of agreed?
No, I don't think so. I think...
I'm sure they wouldn't mind.
That we'd try to worm around them, but... You never know. We'd have to do the business first. It's not something you ever speak about.
Come mid-February, March, if you're up there.
You can't ever speak about stuff like that because...
You get too carried away, don't you?
In your face. Like, yeah. And for us, as I say, it's all about hard work. And if it does come to him, pretty sure if we asked, that it might not be a problem, but... It would be incredible to experience that, even if it was just for 10 minutes more. Like,
yeah,
just,
and it was genuinely...
If you could go back for 10 minutes more now,
it was all expenses paid, wasn't it? I mean, all expenses paid. You did not have to put your hand in your pocket for a second.
Well,
genuinely.
We went for breakfast the first morning. Yeah. I put it in there. And I go down the restaurant for a breakfast and order an omelette. It was like $50 or something for an omelette.
So expensive, weren't it?
Yeah. I was raging. I was like, what's going on here? So I texted the group, I can't believe I just paid £50 for an omelette. And just sure enough, the lads who were sorting the whole trip out just replied 2 minutes later. It wasn't even why I'd done it, but they literally replied 2 minutes later, sorry lads, breakfast's are served at the Cabanas tomorrow.
Yeah.
Next day, there's muffins, all sorts. And I was like, geez, I didn't even mean that. I was literally just saying, it's a joke, this hotel, £50 for an omelette. And we ended up getting them for nothing the next day. I was buzzing.
That's how good it was. Honestly, yeah, Vegas trip, incredible. And I hope you get to visit a second time at the end of the season, mate, when the mighty Wrexham get promoted up to League One. Paul Mullen, thank you so much. Once again, the book is out now, My Wrexham Story by Paul Mullen. It's in the link in the description down below.
And it's phenomenal.
And it is phenomenal. So much more stuff in there as well. So much more nutty gritty. Mulls, thank you so much, mate.
Thank you.
Up the Fozcast.
Up
the Fozcast.
Just say it. Thanks everybody for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.